All right. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Sorry. Welcome to our third class on processes and their API. Reminder just that the timing homework is due next week. Of course, there's a quiz, as there will be. Last time we were talking about the wait system call and file descriptors. We're going to continue that discussion on file descriptors and sort of put them to use. We'll also talk about pipes, and we will sort of preview next week's topic on virtual memory. Any thoughts, questions before we get into it? Everyone's ready? Okay. Very cool. Okay. So if you recall, last time we were looking at sort of syntax like this, right? Where we have a program we want to run, and as we're sort of familiar with, right, this implies that it's probably a program we wrote, it's in our local directory. We want to run it, but we want to do it in a specific way, right? We want the output, rather than going to the terminal to sort of interact with us, we just want that output to go to a file. And shells allow us to do this. We've probably done this many times. But now we sort of have the tools where we can see, like, how do we actually implement that? And we can see that it's actually, because of the system calls we have access to, it's actually not too complicated. And it's actually kind of, in a sense, intuitive, like, how we can do that once we see under the hood of what's going on here. This does sort of boil down to a two-step process. So first, we need to have an output file open that we can write to. Okay, just like we would write to any file if we were just doing it inside of our program. Kind of makes sense, right? If we want to write to it, we need to open it. Okay, so that's one step. Now, the sort of key to all of this is that second step, which is we want my program, or sorry, just program here, to use not standard out when it writes to standard out, like if it calls printf. We actually want that to write to our new file. And that's the key part we have to set up. So how do we do that? Right? How do we get it so that without modifying, and the key is we're not modifying program, right? If we run this in a shell, we don't have to go, to make this work, we don't go in and edit the code for program and have it open this file and then write to that. Program works just as it did before, except we've set it up so that it doesn't print to the terminal, it actually writes to this output file. Now, to do this, we have to sort of look and go back to how file descriptors are represented within the kernel. So just like we saw last time, this process info is an object stored within the kernel, which holds some state about our process. And we've talked about using this for various things, like storing registers. In this case, we're interested in file descriptors. Now, within this struct, we have an array, right? So we have an array of length size of open file descriptions. And so this is how the kernel is keeping track of which files we have open in our process on our behalf. But there's an important detail that we haven't really gone into yet, but we need to now, which is that this is actually an array of pointers, right? We can see that. So we have these files, but we're not actually including the entire open file description object. We're just keeping a pointer, an array of pointers to those objects, which are allocated somewhere else. Make sense? Okay. And so if we were to just to kind of do a quick drawing here, right, of something like our array, this files array, and it's got a whole bunch of entries, dot, dot, dot. And so we'd have, say, a pointer here. Anyone remember what that first index is for? Index 0? Yeah. Is that for stuff in the command? No. We have talked about this, yeah. Standard in. Yeah, right. So file descriptor 0 is reserved for standard in generally, and so that first index is going to be a pointer to this an open file description, which corresponds to standard in. Now, standard out is 1. Oops. So that will be that second pointer here. And then so on and so forth. Now this is, right, and so just a reminder, right, then the actual index into this array, right, 0, 1, 2, et cetera, those are the file descriptors, right? So when we have a file descriptor in our program, really what that is it's a way to index this array. So we're referring to a particular pointer to a file description, which then represents whatever that sort of file is. Okay. Now, what this allows us to do, and the reason that we like that we're keeping pointers here, an array of pointers rather than the objects themselves, is that it allows us to do a pretty simple operation, sort of depicted by this code here. So if we wanted to, say, change what file descriptor 1 or the standard out file descriptor is actually referring to, we can basically do that by changing the pointer in our files array to, instead of where it is now, to be pointing to a different open file. Right, and so basically, if we did that line of code, in effect, what would happen? We'd remove that pointer and go back and we would insert a new pointer here, right, to some other object. So syntactically, not a lot going on here, right? We're just indexing an array, overwriting that value with a different item from the same array, which is just, in this case, a different pointer. But this is very useful, right? Because remember what we're trying to do. We're trying to have this program use its normal printf, use standard out, but instead of writing to the terminal, we want it to write to that file. And so by doing this, now this file descriptor 1 is going to refer to the new file. And so what's can kind of seem like maybe a complicated operation, because of the careful design of this struct and how this process state is managed, it's actually not that complicated. It's really just this sort of like, at least sort of at a high level, this one line of code. And so this is really the essence of good system design, is that we can enable really powerful features like being able to do shell redirection without a lot of complexity, where we could have bugs, and this is in the kernel, by the way, right? The process, the user space process, can't modify this structure directly, because that would be bad. So the kernel has to do this by having these sort of simple operations that reduces bugs, reduces complexity, which is really nice, but we have to sort of design things the right way. Now, I said that a process can't do this, right? A process has no access to the ability to sort of edit this files array. And so to the way we, of course, handle that is with system calls. Right, and so basically, if we want to perform this logical operation that we see in code here, we're going to call the system call dupe2 or duplicate. And basically, you can see the arguments here. We give it 2 file descriptors. This second file descriptor is called the new file descriptor. That's basically what we want to set. And then the old file descriptor is what we want to use instead. So our programs are going to call the system call to affect the operation shown. Any questions? Good with this so far? All right, so back to our goal here and our steps. And so now we have the mechanism which allows us to do that second part, which is to make our new file descriptor make standard out actually the same thing. And so again, we're using this system call. The arguments here sometimes take some getting used to. So new file descriptor is what we want to sort of reassign, and that we want it to refer to something else, this old file descriptor. And so these will refer to the same open file description as we saw, because we're basically just updating the pointers in that array. Now, if we're reusing an existing file descriptor, so if new FD is already allocated, the system will take care of closing that for us. So if, for example, we were using new file descriptor that was already opened, and it was the last file descriptor for a particular open file, the kernel will go ahead and close that for us so we don't leak that extra file descriptor. And we don't keep those resources around for a file that we can no longer access. Now, it's important, though, that we keep in mind that all we're doing is updating these pointers in this array. And so the actual description object, which explains sort of the open file and where we're in the file, like where we are currently writing, where we're currently reading, that's not duplicated. That stays the same. And so what we're going to end up with, we're going to have sort of multiple file descriptors which are pointing to the same open resource. And so if we use one file descriptor, and then we go and use the other one, it's as if we used the same file descriptor all along. And so even if we have more reads and writes, we're still going to have the same position in that file. Okay, so let's put these pieces together, look at an example here. So what are we looking at? So we want to redirect standard out to output.txt. First, we can call flush. Basically just, okay, let's clear everything that we had that we were intending to send a standard out. It may have been buffered somewhere, so let's make sure we flush that fully so that gets written. Now we do our open. Okay, nothing too surprising here, right? Open a file. Open returns a file descriptor. That's what we're going to want to use. And so this allows us to write to this file. Now, it's possible that this open failed. Right? Maybe we don't actually have access to that. Or something else went wrong. We want to make sure that we check for that and handle it. Let's assume that we can open this file for the sake of this example. Now, we want to make standard out direct to that file. And so we can do that with the dupe2 system call. We want to, the new file descriptor is going to be standard out because that's what we want to update. And we want that to point to the same place as FD, which is the new file descriptor we just got from opening the file. And so, in effect, now we have it set up so that at this point, right after calling dupe2, if we write to FD or if we write to standard out, those will both do the same thing, and they'll both write to the file. And that's sort of the key ingredient to be able to redirect the output to that would normally go to standard out into the file. Okay, and then to really make the point that, or to sort of make sure that we understand how these file descriptors are working, we can close that file descriptor we created, but that's just closing that descriptor, or essentially that index into the array. That does not close the underlying resource if there's something else using it as well. And so since we've already made this copy, right, standard out is pointing to that same open file now as well, that file descriptor at index one, we can call close on this other file descriptor. That file descriptor is no longer valid, but that underlying resource is still open and it's still accessible from file descriptor number one or standard out. And so when we call this print statement after that, it will work as we sort of expect now, which just means it'll write to output.txt. Questions? What seems off? Anything? So how do we get questions? How do we get standard out back? Well, we don't. And so if we want to keep that resource as something we can use, what we'd have to do is we have to take standard out, copy that to something else, a new file descriptor. Now the operating system will see that there's two file descriptors to the same resource. And so when we close one, by calling the dupe2 we have shown here, it'll know, okay, wait, we still have something else, and so it won't deallocate those resources. We could go ahead and use that other file descriptor as we would standard out. And if we wanted to undo this operation, right, we wanted to put printf, so print it back to the terminal, we could, again, call dupe again and move that file descriptor we'd sort of saved over here and put it back. What else? Yeah.
So standard out bound
rule
would be one.
Is standard out always file descriptor number one? Or will it be replaced? This is a good question because this is where it's sometimes English and systems are a little bit tricky to keep in sync. And so when we say standard out being file descriptor one, that's kind of our interface to it. And so if printf by default is going to use standard out, it's basically going to use file descriptor one. And so in that sense, it is. But then we also think of standard out being sort of something that we would display to the terminal. In that case, we could have something else. We could have file descriptor 200 be that. So there's a little bit of subtlety there. But generally speaking, we're thinking, okay, yeah, the slot for one is reserved for standard out. And whether that's going to a file or the terminal, we would typically think of that as a standard out. Okay. All right. And so now we can look at sort of our library of functions and sort of how they interact with this data structure. So remember, this is the array of pointers here. And so our open operation is basically allocating a new index in that array, and the identifier of that's going to be the file descriptor, so that's our new file descriptor. And then we're going to go ahead and allocate the open file description for whatever new thing we just opened. And then we'll save the pointer to that in our array. So basically this is allocating a new object and then saving the pointer to it. So that's what open essentially maps to. The duplicate call that we've been looking at is essentially reassigning, so taking a particular index and assigning it and copying it, copying the pointer from another place in the array. So again, we're not duplicating the actual description object, just the pointer. Close maps to just clearing that pointer from the array. So we typically use null as a sentinel, meaning that we don't have a valid pointer here. And so we're just saying this file descriptor is no longer valid. It's not usable. Now, of course, close, all of these things are doing additional work as well. But as far as how they interact with the array, that's what we're looking at. Okay, and then we get to fork. So remember, we said fork makes a full copy of the program, including file descriptors. Notice we've always been saying file descriptors, right? And so the way we can implement that is with an array, right? And so this is our new child process, and we're just going to copy all of the pointers from the parent. So from the parent's file arrays, we're just going to take all the pointers, copy them to child. Again, we're not copying the actual resource it's pointing to, just those pointers. Yeah. Okay.
Is
Is there a way to modify this code such that if we called this printf at the end, it would do both things? No. So our file descriptor is referring to one resource, one open file, or the terminal, or a network socket, or something. With these sort of abstractions, printf is just going to use one of those, and it's going to go to one place. Now, I think what you're sort of referring to is this idea of, hey, it might actually be nice to print to the terminal and save to a file. We're going to need an extra tool to do that. Which I'm happy to talk more about if anyone is curious. Okay, and so we've got our calls here, open, duplicate, close, fork, and the fork is copying all the pointers, right? Okay, and so this is very important for the implications for what happens when we call fork. Questions? Right. Okay, cool. So let's see some examples of the implications of this. So in this first example, we have our file, foo.txt. It contains two characters, A and B. Okay? Now, if we look at this code, what's happening here? So we're calling open and getting a file descriptor 1. We're calling open again and getting a new file descriptor. But now because we've called open, we've really opened that file twice. And so we've created two separate open file descriptions just so happen to refer to the same file in the file system. Now, if we read from file descriptor 1 and we read from file descriptor 2, those are both going to read from the beginning of the file. And frankly, if we hadn't had the previous discussion, you know, this would make total sense, right? This is basically exactly what we would expect to happen. You open the file twice, you read from each version of that, of course, you're going to read the same file, right? But now, given that we have had the discussion, and we have been looking at these file descriptors, let's look at a slightly different version. Same setup, foo. Still contains A and B. But now we call open one time, right? We get a file descriptor for that. Okay, and we're, you know, again, in these examples, we're going to assume this succeeds. But now we call duplicate, and we give it a new file descriptor of 100, and the file descriptor we just opened. And so this is telling the system, hey, I want file descriptor 100 to refer to the same thing as FD. Now we call read twice, once with the file descriptor we got from open, and once with our file descriptor 100 that we just used to duplicate our original file descriptor. And what do we see now? So now the first call is going to read the first byte. The second read reads the second byte, because again, we only have one underlying open file description. We happen to have two names for it, in effect, right? Two different file descriptors, but they're referring to the same thing. So we read the first one, we increment the seek pointer, so we know that we've read one byte. And we call the second read, even though the file descriptor is the same, or sorry, is different, we're referring to the same underlying thing. We pick up where we left off, because we wouldn't want to keep rereading the same file from the beginning. And then we get the next byte. Cool with that? Yeah. Yeah, is this one different from the previous one? Because in the previous example, our two open calls meant we had two file descriptors that were pointing to different objects, right? Now, in this example, we have two file descriptors, but they're pointing to the same object. Exactly. Yeah. Let me see if I understand the question. So if somewhere up here I had defined a new variable, FD2, and then I need to initialize this, so I could do this. And then I could pass, instead of passing in this 100, I could pass in FD2. Is that what you're thinking? Yeah, this will do the exact same thing, right? Whether that's a constant in the code or a variable, we're passing in, this isn't by reference, this is copying that value, and this will have the same effect. Yeah.
So in slide 4, we have like two different objects. If you were to write to those, would you actually be writing to two different files? But if you were to write to this slide, would you be writing to the actual same file?
Okay. So we're looking at read because it's a little bit simpler. But what if we were writing? So one answer to that question is, well, we only open the file for reading, and so write won't work. Now, if we had opened the file for writing and we tried to write, we're not writing to two separate files, right? Open with that file name, foo.txt, that's going to have the same meaning both times. So it's going to refer to the same sort of file in the file system. And so if we tried to write to that, we're going to end up writing to the same underlying file. In this case, and in this case as well. It's going to have different meanings because in the first case, we're going to be writing at the same time. Whereas here, we're basically, there's going to be sequential writes. Just like we're doing sequential reads because the next read leaves off or starts where the previous read left off, writes would operate the same way, essentially the way it would be normally had we not done, if we just opened a file one time. That's right. So question is, with read, the location that we're reading from is stored in that open description object within the kernel. And so to give this the property that we want, which is we call read once, we read the first couple or first amount of data that we asked for, and we call read again, we pick up where we left off, the kernel is doing that tracking for us. Okay, let's look at one more example with our friend. So again, same setup, except now we're calling fork. And as I have been indicating, when we call fork, we have our if statement. And so here we're checking if the return from fork is zero. If it is, that means what? That means we're in the child process, exactly, okay, right? And so here we're gonna execute in the child, and then we're gonna assume fork succeeds. In the parent, right, that must be what we're in if we're in the else. What happens here? So we called open before we forked. We called fork, and then we read in the child. In the parent, we sleep, which is essentially a way to sort of tell the operating system, hey, it'd be really great if you ran these other processes first. I don't need it to do anything. And then hopefully the operating system will run the process afterwards, and the parent calls read on the same file descriptor. Now, what we expect to happen is that the child will read the first byte in the file A, and the parent will read the second byte. Why? Because that file descriptor, when we forked, the descriptor was copied, aka the pointer in that array was copied, but the pointer still points to the same underlying object. And so if one process reads and increments the seek pointer, the other process, when it reads later, is going to use that same position where the previous read left off. So this is another important aspect of fork, and how when we get these duplicated processes, they have access to the same resources. It's important to think about what we actually want. So if in the original process before we called fork, we had opened a bunch of resources, whatever files, sockets, whatever, when we call fork and we have a child process, that child has access to the same things. Now, maybe that's okay because we're specifying the program in this for the child process in the same program. But if that child process is going to call exec, now maybe we don't want whatever program we're going to execute to have these exact same resources. So this is important to consider depending on what we want to do and what resources we want processes to have. Any other questions on the implications of how we've set up file descriptors? All right. Good with this. Okay. And so, basically, we now have the mechanism to do the redirection that we've seen. And we've been showing it with output. This would work effectively the same way with input. Just instead of replacing the standard out file descriptor, we'd replace the standard in file descriptor. But we can have the exact same behavior. It's when we read in input, instead of it coming from us, say, typing in the terminal, it would come from a file. Now, this leads to sort of the last feature we want to be able to implement a lot of common shell operations, which is called pipes. And pipes kind of have this name, which is sort of, it does sort of invoke kind of an intuitive representation, right? So we could kind of draw a pretty mediocre picture here, right? Where we have a pipe, and kind of the abstraction we're gonna get is that if we write to one end, we can read from the other. Sort of maybe like what a pipe would do. Okay. And so this is a feature that the operating system is going to provide to us. And we can set it up through the pipe call. And this allows us to... The major use case for this is to communicate between processes. And so you can sort of think about this. We're going to give one process sort of one end here, right? So we'll have process one on this side, and then it can write, let's say, to some other process, process two, which will then read out of that pipe. And so this is one way that we can have these different processes actually communicate. And when we've seen things like in the shell, where maybe we have like program one, right, pipe, program two, right, this operation here, right, that's the shell sort of setting up one of these for us. And so this enables us to say, P1, if that generates output, rather than printing it to the terminal, I actually want to send that as the input to P2. And we can implement that with pipes. All right, what does this call look like? So it's going to look similar to what we've seen. One sort of major difference is that instead of operating on a single file descriptor, we use two file descriptors. And so to set this up, we need an array of length 2 of file descriptors. And the pipe call actually takes in a reference to that array, right? So we pass in pipe underscore FD here, which is the pointer to the start of that array. Again, like most calls, pipe can fail. And so we want to check for that and handle that in some way. For our example here, we're going to assume and most likely, it will not fail. Now, what we have now is the pipe is going to set those two file descriptors. It's going to set one to be the read descriptor and the other to be the write descriptor. And the syntax for the pipe call is that the first element is the read file descriptor and the second entry in that array is the write file descriptor. And this just is. And so if you're sort of doing this for the first time or you come back to it and you haven't written a pipe call in a while, it's worth sort of looking up the documentation just to remind yourself, okay, which one is which? Okay, so now we have descriptors for each end. We can call write on the right end for that file descriptor, and we can call read on the read file descriptor. And whatever we write to the right end, we'll be able to read with the read file descriptor. So again, using the same functionality, right? Still using file descriptors, still using read and write calls, except instead of being a file store in the file system, it's sort of this virtual pipe of connecting kind of the input and output. Any questions? Okay, all right, so let's look at a slightly more realistic and useful example. Okay, so a lot of code here, let's break this down. Some of it we're gonna see is pretty familiar. So the first bit here is what we just saw in the previous slide. Okay, got our two file descriptors for the pipe. We call pipe, that sets it up, assuming it returns correctly, or returns zero. We're gonna assume it does. And for sort of convenience and to make things a little bit more clear, we're going to, again, just sort of rename, if you will, assign to a new variable, the read and write ends, so we don't have to keep in mind what 0 and 1 indices are this whole time. Okay, so that's setting up the pipe. Now we call fork. And this is useful for this example because the main use case for pipes is communicating between two processes. Fork allows us to create a new process. So now we have two processes. Now fork, again, remember, it's a copy, right? So that pipe that exists in the parent is now also going to exist in the child. Like always, our if statement. And we have what the child is going to do and then what the original or the parent process is going to do. And we're going to assume that fork is not failing. Okay. So with our fork, here sort of our, again, standard flow for calling fork. Now what we're doing here is in the child, we want to be able to write to the pipe. So the first thing we do is we close the read end. Now fork gave us, again, both things got a copy, so the both processes have copy of the read and write file descriptors for the pipe. The child process is just trying to write, so it doesn't need the read. So we can just close that file descriptor. Then we'll have some function which will actually write something to this pipe. And when we're finished with that, we can just exit. In the parent process, we're going to do something similar. We're only reading. So this is a way for the child process to send back to the parent. So parent doesn't need to write. So we'll just go ahead and close that. Then we can call read on data coming in the pipe. Use our sort of typical wait just to say, let's wait until this child process is finished. And then we can go and clean up the resource with the close for the read file descriptor. So we were using the read file descriptor, but once we know the process is done, we have no use for that anymore. We close it to clean up the resources. Now, if you notice, right, we close the read end in one process and the write end in the other process. But if you recall the semantics of close, it's just closing the file descriptor. We now have copies of those in each process. And the OS, even though that underlying file descriptor was pointing back to the same object, it closes the index. The file descriptor is no longer valid. But that original object, as long as there's something that's still using it, the operating system will keep that around. And so it's okay that we're closing the end in the other process. That won't sort of get rid of the pipe. And this read will allow us to read data, and the OS will only tell us that we have basically we're at the end of the file when there's no longer the open write end. So when nothing else could ever write to that pipe, the OS will tell us by saying essentially we've hit the end of the file. And that way we know that, okay, we no longer need to, we're never going to get anything else from this pipe. And that happens because the child process exited and that caused the write file descriptor. And importantly, the only remaining write file descriptor, because the parent process closed it, to no longer be valid. And the operating system is like, okay, this pipe is no longer going to be written to, and it can signal that to the reader end. And then finally, we close the read end in the parent process afterwards to clean up those resources. And so we don't leak that file descriptor, keeping something around that's not going to be used again. Yep. So the question is, okay, so in the, question expanded a little bit. So in the parent process, we closed write file descriptor and read file descriptor. But in the child process, we only closed read. We didn't close the write. And we certainly could have. Like after we were done writing to the pipe, we could have closed the write file descriptor. But since we're exiting anyways, and that's going to clean up the resources for that process, we don't have to. It might be sort of good practice to do so that just in case we change the program later and we don't exit right away, we clean up those resources when we're done with them, but sort of functionally, exit's gonna have the same effect. What else?
Close
Yes, so when we call, because we called fork, we end up with a copy of the file descriptors and the pointers to those objects, the underlying file description objects. And so when we close one in one process, we're just closing that copy, right? And the copy that exists in the other process, if that process hasn't closed it, still remains. And that's true for the read, the write, and any other file descriptors we have. What else? Okay, we're good with this. All right. So this is the mechanism we need. We can look at one more example here where zoom into a particular example of what we might actually want to run on the shell, right? So we want to call ls, and then we want to search the output for a particular string. Pretty common operation, right? We don't want to sit there and sift through everything on our own looking for foo, and so we just have grep do it for us. But rather than have ls output the content to the terminal and then us having to sort of copy that, call grep, and then paste it as standard into grep, we can avoid all of that by just piping it directly. Right? And now we have a mechanism to do that. And so we can see the example here. Again, we set up our pipe, and then we call fork. We have our if statement. If it's zero, we're in the child, and at this point, so now we've created the child process. We're going to use that to run ls first. So inside the child process, we're going to set up the write file descriptor as standard out. At this point, we no longer need, well, we never needed the read end of the pipe, because ls is going to output, and so ls is going to send to the pipe. So we don't need the read side, so we can close that. And we don't need our copy of the file descriptor either. So we don't want to have this dangling file descriptor sort of left around. We can go ahead and close that, because we've ensured that we're going to keep, the operating system will keep that resource around, because now the standard out file descriptor points to the same thing. So we can close both of those, and then we call exec as we have before. So now this will run ls, but if you recall, what happens with exec is that we remove the program memory because we're running a new program, and we don't want this new program to have all the same state that the program you see here has, except the file descriptors. So the file descriptors will remain intact. And so now when ls runs, it will use file descriptor 1, standard out. But instead of that pointing to something that will display to the terminal, it's going to go ahead and display, or it's going to write to this pipe. And the beauty of this is that ls is not modified, right? We didn't go and change the source code of ls to do this. We're just changing the sort of environment it's operating within. And so this is that setup that we can do before we actually call exec. Okay, so that's setting up our first command. And so we've created a child process. We can run ls in that. Remember, what happens with exec? It doesn't return, right? We basically just, it's a one-way thing. We're running a new program now. And so when we get back, this if statement will only sort of, we're only going to get here in the parent process because it didn't match that if statement. Now the parent process is going to call fork again, right? Because we need another process for our second command, grep, do virtually the same thing, right? So inside the child here, we're going to set up the standard in to be the read end of that pipe. close the extra file descriptors we don't need, just as we did before, except now we're closing the read copy and the write file descriptor we never actually needed. And of course, just calling exec again. Exec doesn't return. And so we're only going to get back to the parent at this point. And the parent does not need its copy of that pipe, because it originally created it, so it has the file descriptors. It needed those file descriptors just so that when it called fork, they'd be copied to the child. And importantly, the same file descriptors would be copied to both children. Now, those two processes have a pipe between them, and the original parent process doesn't need that, and so it can go ahead and close that resource. Real quick, we can look at this sort of more pictorially. So documenting, diagramming exactly, same thing as the code. Parent is starting, it creates pipe, it then calls fork twice, right? In one of those child processes, we do that setup phase and then call exec for ls. The other child process, we do the setup phase and then exec grep. And what we've done is we've basically set the standard in for our grep process or program to be a pipe and standard out from ls to be the other end of the pipe. So effectively, we've created a pipe between these two processes. And then the parent comes back and it doesn't need the pipe. What questions do you have? Yeah.
So on the last slide, the final close statement, that's for the leftmost.
That's right. So this close at the end here, the only process which is going to get to this line, this sort of final close here, is the original parent process. And so that is this. That's this close 3-4. Yeah, another question. Sure. So if we go back to the code here, and so in both of our child processes, we had this extra line here, right? This close, right? We did it here, and we did it here. And what we're doing here is we're cleaning up these extra file descriptor resources that we don't need, because we don't want sort of these extra dangling file descriptors to be around telling the OS, like, oh, we might use this resource in the future when, in fact, we won't. And so it's safe to do this for two different reasons, right? So in one case, we can close it because it's the end of the pipe we're not using. So when we call fork, we get a copy of everything. So we get a copy of the read end of the pipe and the write end of the pipe. But for the intended application, we just want one program to output, and the other program is going to be the reader. And so we only need the appropriate end in either case. So in one child, we just need the write end so we can close the read, and then vice versa. So that's reason one, we can close the resource. The second reason is because after we call dupe 2, we've now duplicated it, right? So now we have two file descriptors which are referring to the same thing. We don't need both of those. The only one that our programs are going to use, ls and grep, is the one assigned to standard in and standard out. And so we can close the copy that we got from sort of the pipe command originally, which we got because fork copied it for us. And so you can really think of those closes as housekeeping, right? We're just cleaning up state. It's not really Even though close is the system call we use, we're closing the file descriptors, but in this case, we're not really closing any of those underlying resources because we have other references to them. What else? All right, we're good with this. Cool. And so hopefully, right, now that we've seen this a few times, this idea of fork and what happens and how to read that code and how to think about it is becoming a little bit easier, right, with a few practice. And so when we get to the fork homework, you'll be ready for that and be able to sort of think through, okay, now I've got two processes, what's happening, which ones are running, which things, as we see more examples. Okay, speaking of examples, let's look at one more here. Okay, so imagine we have this program. I'll give you a couple minutes to consider that. Talk to your neighbors. The intent here is that the child process is trying to send the character A to the parent. However, when we actually run this code, what we see is that the parent actually reads 0 bytes instead of 1. What went wrong? Let's take 3 minutes, talk to your neighbors, see if you can figure out the issue. All right. Any ideas on maybe what happened here? Anyone want to?
This just feels like a timing issue. It feels like the parent might be running before the child is able to send anything from the standard PID.
Mm. Okay, so I like it. So one idea is, we've been talking about, we call fork, we have two processes, we don't get any control over how the operating system schedule those, and so if, one thing to consider is what if the parent is running first, and so there's nothing has been written yet until it calls read. Another idea? Okay, so one thing, right at the beginning is we're calling fork and then pipe, so maybe that could be an issue. Are there other ideas, potential problems? So maybe one more could be, we could be maybe reading and writing the wrong ends of the pipe. So I think this is kind of helpful, right? To be thinking through okay, I wrote my code. I thought I was doing the right thing. I ran it. I didn't get what I expected. And then to sort of brainstorm, what maybe didn't go right? Given this behavior, what are some things that could happen? So maybe things ran in an order I didn't expect. Maybe I didn't call the system calls in an order that was correct. Maybe I'm not quite using the file descriptors or using the resources the way I should have been, right? And now we can go through and check these. So the first kind of idea here of maybe the sort of reads and writes are kind of happening out of order. And they very well may be, because again, we don't get a lot of control, right? If the parent runs first or if the child runs first. And we're not calling wait, so we could put a wait here. But in this case, read here, we're actually okay, because the read is going to wait until there's something actually to read there. So in this case, that will be okay. Another idea, we're calling fork and then pipe. And if we think about what's happening here, right? So now fork is doing the copy, and now we have two processes. But what this is going to happen is now each process is going to create its own pipe with its own read and its own write file descriptors. And so we essentially have two different pipes. And so while it kind of feels like one process is writing into the pipe, the other process is reading, really what's happening is the two processes are, one's writing to a pipe that nothing's reading from, and one's reading from a pipe that nothing's writing to. They're separate pipes. And so that is going to be a problem. And then we could double check these indices, but it does look like we have those right. We have those correct, I should say. The read is matching the read, and the write is matching the write. So the issue here is that we need to make sure that we do the pipe first, so that when we have the fork, we have a copy of the same pipe. We don't end up with two different pipes. Yeah? Yeah, the fix is pretty easy. We just move fork down here. Again, right, this is why we typically have, we have our sort of convention, right? We call fork, and then the next line is that if. Because once we've done the copy, we really, to make sort of most meaningful applications, we really need to know, are we in the child now or are we in the parent? And so it's definitely kind of a red flag that there's something between fork and if. Right? That's something worth being like, okay, what's going on here? Is that really what we want? We really want this to run in both processes. Okay, so that sort of kind of covers our API for processes, right? We can create them, We can have them run new programs. We can wait for them to finish. We can open files, read and write to those files. And in Unix, kind of everything is a file, so we can use the same abstractions, whether it's a network socket or a pipe or certain devices and other things as well. We've talked about how we can do, how the file descriptor data structure in the kernel is set up so that we get this really nice property where we can do things like redirection and pipes pretty cleanly, and the system calls that reflect that as well. Any questions about sort of, you know, these topics that are still lingering? Okay, I'm sure they will come up, right? Of course, we're happy to help in office hours. Asking questions on Piazza is great as well. Okay, so we're gonna take a short break. We have a few minutes left. And we're going to have a sort of a teaser for next week's topic. So let me get this set up. All right, so where we're going next is we're going to look at sort of one of a very, very, very important idea in computer systems of that is called VM, right? So that's our, our topic here, right? And this is, the V is still virtual, M is not machine, M is memory, right? So we're going to have virtual memory. We've kind of had to talk about this a little bit, right? If you recall, we had an example where we had two different processes, process A and B or something, and they each used the same address, like address 0x10000, right? And it was a little bit counterintuitive that even though they had the same address, they were not actually accessing the same memory. And the reason for that is virtual memory. And this is a very, very important and really enables a lot of what we can do with computers with this sort of abstraction, where we can have a process. It has its state, so maybe, of course, it's code that it's actually executing, a heap, right, for some dynamic allocation. Of course, it's stack for its execution. And we have this within this really large address space here. Right, so this is, we're showing a 64-bit address space that modern machines have. That's a ton of memory. And it's great because the process sees it and it's like, this is wonderful. I have the whole machine to myself. Well, most of the machines. So part of this is we're going to reserve for the operating system, but still, right, with that many bits, this is still a huge amount of memory. And what's great is that every process gets this exact same abstraction. And so when we have a machine, we want to run multiple processes, we can tell them, hey, your code is always going to start at address 0x40,000. Or, no, I guess it's 400, 0x400,000 if we, yeah, that address. And we tell that to process A, and process A is like, great. And we tell that to process B, and process B is, okay, great. So this is awesome from an abstraction point of view to provide this illusion, but of course we also know that, wait a minute, we can't just use the same address for two different things. They would be writing all over each other. That would never work. And this is the beauty of virtual memory, because we give this amazing illusion and abstraction to our processes. We tell them that you have all of this memory, way more than we can fit on any machine that we have. When in reality, right, we know that the hardware only has so much physical memory, way less than what we can represent with 64 bits. But the processes don't need to know that, right? And this is wonderful. So not only do we get this wonderful abstraction for processes where they just think they have this whole address space and they're always going to be at these particular addresses, which is great. But since we actually do want to support multiple processes, we have a way that we can share what physical memory we do have. And so we can have some of it allocated for process A, some allocated for process B. And our processes have no idea this is happening. Or at least they don't have to have any idea, right? Because when we write programs, we don't think about this, right? We're just like, hey, malloc some memory. Okay, great, I have an address. I don't think about like, wait a minute, is that address going to conflict with every other running process? No. And the beauty of this is what's happening in the middle, right? So the operating system is giving us this mapping and maintaining this mapping so that our processes see this wonderful address space that's all just for that one process. The OS is saying, okay, wait a minute. I only have so much memory, so I'm going to give sort of this chunk to this process and this other chunk to this other process. And anytime the process wants to ask, I'm just going to do this redirection. So we get the sharing and we get the illusion, which is amazing. And so then when we context switch, so if we even if we have just a single core, we can run a single thread at a time, process A runs, it gets access to its memory. If we context switch to process B, we update the mappings. And so this is why when we had that example where we had address 0x10,000 in two different processes, those were the virtual addresses, right? Kind of on this figure, it's on this side. But in reality, the operating system was mapping those to very different physical addresses over here. And so they weren't corresponding to the same actual storage location, even though the processes had the same virtual address. And so this is an incredibly powerful mechanism. It allows us to do sharing. It allows us, it also gives us really nice isolation properties. Because even though, again, process A and B are using the same addresses, they're not actually accessing the same memory. So one process can't overwrite the memory of another, which is really nice. However, right, this does mean more work for the OS, right? Because now the OS in the middle here has to do something about this, right? It has to maintain this mapping, has to keep track of this, has to update it when you switch from one process to the other. Now, how do we do that? That's what we'll talk about next week. Thanks, everyone.